I'd like to greet you in the way we greet everybody in our part of the world. We start with saying Assalamu alaikum, which in Arabic means peace be upon you all. Usually when I go to a lot of conferences, we go back home with a lot of theory and we feel good about a lot of things or bad, but we really don't go home having something tangible that we can actually go and do and implement. And as scientists, we really like to get our hands dirty. So I hope that by the end of my talk, you have something to go home to actually do and take action and not just enjoy while thinking. Supercomputers, even as advanced as they are today, cannot predict climate change. And they also can't predict how the brain works and how cognition actually happens. And the reason is because these things that happen in real life are not 1 + 1 = 2. They're a lot more complicated. And as Alan Turing once suggested, that it would be wise to include a random element in a learning machine to be able to predict more accurately what a real life situation would look like. And this is not new. If we look at living systems, take for example neurons, if you look at the axon of a neuron, it's very small, around 0.1 micrometer. And because it's so small, as the signals pass through it, you have a lot of thermal noise. And this thermal noise results in random fluctuations, which in a way could be looked at as a bad thing that hinders mechanisms going on in the cell. But it has been found out that probably human creativity is the byproduct of randomness. And that is how we as humans have evolved. Why am I sharing this with you? So yesterday, I was actually sitting in an airport for 20 hours in Amman reading what I just shared with you in the latest magazine of Nature. And why was I sitting for 20 hours in an airport? The reason was that we had checked in, my husband and I, coming to Budapest. And after we checked in our bags and we're sitting at the gate, they told us that the plane couldn't land because of climate, because of weather. Nobody predicted that the bad weather that was coming. So we had to check out our bags again, go to a hotel and wait. Then they called us a few hours later and said, okay, now check in again, get your tickets and go to the gate. We did that. And then they said, the weather's bad, the plane didn't come, check your bags out again and go back to the hotel. And so we went back to the hotel and waited, and then they said, come on in, we have another plane that's coming. And we checked in again our bags and sat at the gate. And finally, the plane actually was on the tarmac and we flew to Budapest. So what I started thinking is that all these delays was maybe some of the randomness that should have been figured into the prediction of the climate weather, and that maybe this is not such a bad thing, that it could be a source of inspiration for me sitting in the as a scientist and playing this thing out. Add to that that there's a huge body of research now that talks about stress making you more productive and actually happier. And me being a very optimistic person, that when I see a cup that's empty and only has a drop of water, I see an ocean in the water, I thought, oh, we have all the ingredients for a recipe of success and innovation and creativity and maybe a huge breakthrough in science sitting there in that airport for 20 hours. And so I call you all and invite you to come to Jordan in 2017, because that's where I am from, to see the result of this randomness that happened in the airport while coming to this World Forum. But a note of caution to airlines, if anybody's here from an airline, not to use this as an excuse for delays or to start planning or designing delays as a way for scientists to become more and more creative. Because it has to be natural. It can't be designed or planned. Otherwise, it defies the whole purpose. Coming from the Middle East, where there's a lot of challenges, as you all know, we have a youth bulge coming up for the next 30 years. We have huge unemployment. However, we have a huge number of our youth are very highly educated. And I'm sure you can add a list of other things, political instability and other stuff to this list of challenges that we have in the Middle East. What I see in this list of challenges is a huge potential. It's that, again, that randomness that is the place for creativity and innovation. And from there, I see that a scientist, rather, and the new generation, that we can look at that as a huge potential for the next generation to adopt and adapt non-traditional roles in their roles as scientists in serving the community and informing the community with the science that they're making. And this comes at the interdisciplinary boundaries of science, because when a scientist is at the interdisciplinary boundaries, there's a lot of creativity. And actually, this was one of the winning recommendations from the yesterday afternoon's Young Scientists meeting, which they will be presenting in the parliament, hopefully after tomorrow. So how do we actually go about helping scientists to inform society. Society, to a certain extent, has been saturated and fed up by the calls from NGOs and social workers and religious workers on how to do good and how to be leaders in the community. And I see here an opportunity for scientists who are role models and respected actually by their communities to assume that role and to leave their labs and ivory towers and actually go out to the street and talk to the people, because they are looked upon, especially by the young generation, as role models for them. And I ask them to go beyond their disciplines, because we know these scientists, when they go from one discipline to another, they come in with a fresh perspective. They're not limited by the dogma of the new field that they're going to, and so they're more free to explore and experiment. And being a scientist, they're very curious and they're bold to try new things. So those are the ingredients for innovation. And that's why we want more and more of this interdisciplinary interaction going on. And I'm going to give you an example of this happening. I'm a molecular biologist, and I work on genetics of diabetes in ethnic populations. However, I went beyond my discipline and worked on developing a program to encourage children to read for pleasure, which we called We Love Reading. And this program is way outside my discipline. However, because I'm at the interdisciplinary boundary where innovation can happen, and I'm not limited by the dogmas of the discipline of education, this program, We Love Reading, was chosen as one of the best education programs for children refugees around the world. And it's also implemented in normal communities where children don't read. So there is a way and there is a chance for scientists to contribute to society using their expertise. We also, in order to encourage more scientists to go beyond their limit and beyond their discipline, we created last year a competition between scientists to come up with novel ideas to serve their community and going into their uncomfort zone through an organization called Taghir, which in Arabic means change. We also, we must not forget the perspectives of females in the field of science and how they can contribute to solving problems and challenges in society, which would serve the sustainable development goals as they have been put forth. In order to encourage more and more females to actually contribute, we need more role models and more mentoring networks. So we created a program called the Three Circles of Alimat. Alimat is the female, in Arabic it means female scientists. And this network, which has started in Jordan and is spreading throughout the Arab world and then next year throughout the whole world, works on mentoring women and women to help younger women to achieve their goals and find out their passion so that they can go above and beyond. But I want to make a note here that in Jordan and the Arab world, our problem actually is not getting more women into science. In the hardcore sciences and in the application sciences such as pharmacy and dentistry, females are above 60% in terms of percentages, and that's pretty high. So to me, it's not about encouraging more females to go into science, it's about giving females the freedom to choose what they want and for them to arrange their priorities and what they want in life. And maybe that will take them on a trajectory that is not a straight line, but a zigzag. But ultimately, they will create their own definition of success and therefore contribute to solving the challenges in society in a very unique and innovative way. However, that's enough speaking about scientists. How about students? How do we encourage students to take upon their role of communicating with society? We all know that education should be not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire. And how do we encourage a student to be curious and to pursue their interests and thereby applying their discoveries to society? Well, one can do it in the traditional academic way through different pedagogies, such as problem-based learning, or using drama as a tool to get students interested in science, or reading novels to get them interested in science, or even introducing them to the concept of global civics, which would allow a student to think of his or her responsibility towards the whole globe as a scientist. But more importantly is how do we tie directly the student to science, to society? How does the science student understand how to employ the tools and skills they learn in the classroom to society, like learning and through practice? So service learning is a new concept, relatively new, that we have started applying in Jordan, where what happens in service learning is rather than people sitting in a lecture hall just like you and they get bored by the speaker because there's a certain percentage of attention that you can maintain, rather than doing that, we actually tell our students that they have to go out into the community and teach whatever knowledge they should have learned in the classroom to the sector of the community that is in need of that knowledge. And therefore, the student understands how they can employ their knowledge and skills in helping people and helping their community. And the community looks upon the student not as a burden, but actually as as someone who can actually help them in reality in solving their everyday problems. And one would question, how do you do that in a hardcore science such as molecular biology or cell biology, what I teach at the university? So you have to be very creative and have a huge imagination. So what we do with our students is we tell them they have to go out and search the newspapers and magazines and all the media outlets for pieces of science news that are actually wrong or erroneous in any way, whether it's wrong referencing or misguiding of people. And then we tell them, after they find that erroneous piece of news, is to write a letter to the editor explaining why it's wrong, what's missing in it, and how it's misguiding the general public. And after that happens, the journalists and the editors of the local magazines and newspapers come and meet my students and have an interactive discussion of where the students are actually teaching the media and the journalists how they should report on science. And the result was amazing, not just on the journalists who were actually writing every word my sophomore students were telling them, but the effect was on the student themselves feeling this huge, you know, boost in confidence is that we count. You know, the knowledge and that time spent reading a textbook has an effect on society, and that they can really inform policymakers just by monitoring what's going on in the media. Another project that we started doing at the university, also in Jordan, is we introduced students to recycled science art. So we tell our students that you have to choose a scientific concept and manifest it in an art, in an artistic way, in whatever way you want, but on one condition, that you can only use recycled material. Of course, this results in that the student goes out to the community, starts collecting recycled things, talks about it with the local community, trying to manifest or exhibit the scientific concept in a simple way through art. And this is important for society to tie between art and science, and for the scientist herself to use both sides of her brain. And here's a picture of a stem cell colony on mouse cells using recycled gloves. And lastly, what we do with our students is we tell them that they have to choose a problem that bothers them from the community around them, as simple as maybe people don't queue, and then they have to think of a solution that they can actually implement, not a solution that, for example, that the government has to change policy or that we have to change all the parents of the next generation. No, something very simple that they can actually go and do next day. And then these students have to keep a diary of what they did for the following month. And we tell them they don't have to actually make a difference. What matters is that they tried to make a difference. It's about the journey that they go through and how they change through that journey, and about how they feel confident and feel responsible for making a difference in their community. And my students, as a result, tell me that they cannot sit quiet and see something going bad or wrong around them. They feel that they have to go out and do something. They cannot be silent anymore. And that's what we want. We want our scientists to actually feel responsible for what's going on in the world and to provide solutions through their expertise and knowledge. So in the end, if we can help the young generation to realize the potential they have inside them, and to know that they have something unique to give, whoever they are, and that nothing is impossible, then together we can do small things that can have a huge impact, such as the chaos theory says, when a butterfly flutters its wings in China, you have a hurricane in the Atlantic. So every small deed counts. And together, we can all make a difference if we start at the grassroots. Thank you very much.